our father was an orphan. His birth name was Maurice Ganley. He lived all of his 75 years without ever knowing his parents, or for that matter, even attempting to find them. Many here have told me that they first learned this by reading the obituary that I wrote for him. I'm not surprised by that. Our father very rarely mentioned this past. He didn't mention that he was raised in a dormitory with Father Pete Aliotta. Not because he was ashamed of it, not because he was a shy or private person, we all know that. He didn't talk about it because it simply didn't matter to him. Lesser men would have seized, I think, upon this as an excuse to fail or an opportunity to brag about all that he overcame as a result of this, despite this profound handicap, but not Maurice, not our father. He would never do that. It was never about him. It was always about the other person. Our father cared so deeply for all the people who were present in his life that he wasted no time, not one precious moment, on the people who were absent. You, all of you, here today, are the people who were present in his life. You are the people who mattered to him. On behalf of the entire Early family, I want to thank you for being here with us today to celebrate our father's life. If he were here, he would have hugged each and every one of you and sincerely thanked each and every one of you. Next, then he would have enthusiastically insisted that everyone here go back to St. John Vianney Parish Hall and eat all the wonderful food that's been prepared. And he probably wouldn't let you leave unless you did that. He'd point out, we're having fried oysters, we're having cream of crab soup, we're having Southern Maryland stuffed ham. These were all of his favorites. What's not to like? So don't let him down. I know that we're all busy and we have places to be other than here. But you know how important that was to him, because he was really all about fellowship. As Father Daly pointed out, he really was, and I thought it was wonderful and very moving, the link in the chain that linked so many of us in this room, one to the next. Our father was an optimist. First, last, and always, he was a relentlessly positive person. Problems only existed to make solutions possible. His health battles, really, at the end, kind of were exemplary of that. He had hydrocephalus, which then was treated and resulted in a staph infection, and really the staph infection was going to kill him. He was on the neurology floor at Hopkins, beautiful view, fifth floor, but 36 days, that's a long stay. He never complained. Never. Not once. He remained convinced that he would recover, even when many of us, myself included, really were preparing for his imminent death. His recovery, for those of you who witnessed it, was truly miraculous. Our father not only survived, he came back to us stronger than he'd been for 10 years. And for 8 wonderful months, he was back in vivid color. It would be easy to think that that was cruel, unfair, to come back so fully, only to lose him unexpectedly, that our father would not have agreed. Our father would have emphasized the positive. He would have told me to get up and stop crying, and that's for damn sure. Our father would have been thankful for the gift of renewed health and the time he spent with the family and friends who were closest to him. His optimism was a source of strength to him and to all privileged to have known him. Our father stayed the course and finished what he started. He was married for 51 years to the same beautiful co-ed from Charleston, South Carolina, that he met, as Father Daly told you, at the John Newman Society at Maryland. They were holding hands last Monday when he passed from this world into the next. That's a beautiful thing. He spent his entire professional career with one employer. How many people can say that? The Prince George's County Public Schools. Not because he couldn't work elsewhere, not because he couldn't do other things. He was a man of many talents. It was because he was a true believer to his very core in the importance of a quality public education. Many of you here today have that same passion, that same deep, abiding belief. And he was committed to it. And he stayed with it. Through all the problems that Prince George has experienced, he never, ever blinked. In addition to his marriage and to his career, he also was selected and served 44 years on the board of directors for the Educational Systems Federal Credit Union. I keep wanting to call it by the old name. Some of you will remember how he would do the raffle to get everybody to come to the annual supper so you have a quorum so that you could move on with business. And he would, remember the big gift was a color TV. Can you imagine that now? I mean, they used to get like 2,000 people at this dinner all for a shot to win a color TV. He was a founding member of the International Society for Teacher Education. He started that in 1981. And he worked tirelessly for decades with his fellow professionals traveling around the world. When he locked into something, he stuck with it. And that was also true of him as a father. Our father was a very loving and a very modern father. He told my mom while they were dating that he wanted to have 6 kids, but he reduced the number with each child that actually came along. And as father indicated, he had no personal history, really, on which to model a parenting philosophy. Now, I don't want to discount his adoptive father, my grandfather, John K. Early, who was a wonderful, wonderful man. And when we talk about family, the Wooten family, who is here today, as well as the Crawford family and also the Cooper family, we're all part of his family, and they all have wonderful memories. And seeing you here brought a lot of those back to me. But he didn't have any personal history, like Father said. And so I remember him reading Dr. Benjamin Spock books, which maybe you guys are old enough to remember that, you know. But I think he probably could have been like the template for, you know, Spock's parenting philosophies. And he cooked every bit as much as our mother cooked, which our friends thought was really strange until they stayed for dinner. And he used to hug us and kiss us in public. Man, how we hated it when he kissed us. I mean, it was the worst. And when we were misbehaving, which of course 3 boys separated only by a year and a day each never happened, he wouldn't raise his voice and never raise his hand. He would simply give us that look. And if that didn't work, then the dreaded and always effective, "I'm very disappointed in you." That went. That was as bad as it got. We would much rather have got a spanking than to hear those words. He always had time for us. He always was present in our lives. He was always fully engaged, not just with us, but with our friends. Our friends are here. He knew each one by name. He took them on adventures. Sometimes he would take them without us even around. Like the owl prowl with Tucker is here. I mean, he would just do crazy things with them without us even being involved. He never missed a soccer match. He never missed a music performance. We took wonderful family vacations. He was sincerely interested in anything we were interested in. He wasn't like the other dads, really, in the Overbrook section of Bowie, Maryland. He was Daddy Early. And that's what he would call himself. And he would tell us, "You know what my problem is? I'm too nice." That was his favorite saying. And he was somewhat right. But our father wasn't perfect. Far from it. He was a pack rat. Perhaps this was the natural byproduct of his being an ardent optimist. He always saw the possible uses of what others would commonly refer to as trash. Our mother, God bless her, would fight the good fight and slip an item into the trash, only to have our dad retrieve it. This happened all the time, proclaiming, "That is a perfectly good," fill in the blank with half of what you see in their garage. Another opportunity he had for personal growth, because he clearly wasn't, and that's how he would refer to an opportunity for personal growth, was the Mr. Fix-It home repair arena, because he simply didn't know which end of a screwdriver to hold, and in later years, he didn't even bother owning a screwdriver. Fortunately, he has my brother, who's a mechanical whiz, living a mile away, and my brother-in-law, Eric, and he knew his limitations, and that was certainly not an area where he was strong. Our father, as you've heard, loved to feed people. He was always in the kitchen. If you didn't know where he was, just look there. Any event. He would fry oysters for hours at our Easter and Thanksgiving family reunions in St. Mary's County with the Wootons. And this would be groups of 20 and 30 people. He helped with First Sunday breakfast, and his cream of crab soup was a much-anticipated feature of the annual Men's Club seafood dinner. And I'll have you know, I gave that recipe to the caterer next door, so any of you Men's Club people that are wondering, it's his exact recipe that they've duplicated. He would travel the planet to these international conferences with coolers. You couldn't do this, I guess, after 9/11. With coolers with dry ice and Maryland oysters and Maryland back fin crab. And he would lug these coolers through airports from London to Holland to Portugal to even the Czechoslovakia, now the Czech Republic. He was convinced that if he could just connect with them through the local delicacies of the Chesapeake Bay region, that it would improve whatever it was that they were working on. Our father cooked because it made people happy. He didn't really cook too much for himself. And because he never forgot what it was like to have an onion sandwich for dinner. Do you remember those at the orphanage? They had an onion farmer that gave a lot of onions, and so that was dinner very frequently. Our father, though, also loved a good bargain. Not that he always needed or even wanted what he would buy. He liked the give and take of negotiating what he referred to as his preferred customer discount. Right, John? It went something like this. Okay, that's what other people pay, but what's the price for your preferred customers? And then he would explain to the confused merchant who wanted that he should want my father as a preferred customer, because granting him this status would bring an endless stream of other people that would pay full price. Even a 3% reduction on a $10 item gave him genuine pleasure. It was never about the money. It was all about the confused and incredulous looks that he would get while making the pitch. My brother Stephen is the heir to his legacy of negotiation in this regard, the successor king of audacity. Our father, most of all, I think, was a giving and a loyal friend, and the people here today are a testimony to that. He valued all of his friendships, old and new. Many of his friends, you know, obviously are here today. Some have passed on. And I could sit here and tell you a story that he told me probably about more than half the people in this room. But I'm just going to pick one, and that's his friends, John and Diane Green, who's seated in the second row. John did the first reading about friendship, and we deliberately, as a family, picked that reading, and we deliberately picked John. The Greens moved into the house next door to ours in Overbrook Lane in Bowie, Maryland. This is back when we were all in elementary school. And my father's friendship with this very practical and brilliant engineer was a little bit unusual. I mean, you've heard my dad, he couldn't even hold a screwdriver, much less do probably long division. And here, this guy next door came from the West Coast and he's an engineer. But they became an enduring and rich example for all of the early boys. You might have even called it now, today, in modern parlance, a bromance. They were always cooking something up together. For many years, their focus was the Bowie Bel Air Winery. Many of you may have received as presents what we could kindly call the hit-and-miss results of their efforts. They needed something to drink while throwing horseshoes in their private and well-concealed horseshoe pits in the woods behind the house. Their efforts were far from conventional when it came to making wine, and it usually dovetailed with my dad's love of a good deal. So he would come back from Eastern Market with boxes full of rotting bananas and insist that we immediately convert them into wine. But the most famous one, I think, is when they came up with an idea that they were going to make honeysuckle wine. And immediately they began to search to find a large supply of honeysuckle, you know, little blossoms, and the blossoms are what you use to make the wine. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of blossoms required. So what they did, and a good thing that they didn't enforce the child labor laws too strictly, is that they promised all of us kids in the neighborhood in Overbrook a hot dog party if we would spend the entire Saturday climbing trees, cutting down vines, dragging them to the harvesting area, and meticulously pulling apart every blossom from every stem. I can't even get my kids to eat hot dogs. Well, we were suckers, weren't we? And we spent that whole day poison ivy, ladders up against trees. I mean, I didn't see any belts or, you know, safety apparatus. I mean, we literally life and limb so that John and my dad could have honeysuckle wine. Recently, we all went on a cruise to celebrate my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And my dad was in very poor health. This was when he was just going downhill from the hydrocephalus. And I saw Jim, you know, I mean, excuse me, I saw John, you know, push him throughout that entire big boat. I don't know what my mom was thinking when she booked us on the second largest cruise line in the world. It was what it was, second longest. But John never complained. He pushed him and my dad in the wheelchair, and my dad probably wouldn't have let anybody else push him in a wheelchair but John. And the four of them, both my parents and John and Diane, played what appeared to me to be endless games of pinochle. I don't even know how many points you guys possibly scored, but there they were playing pinochle just nonstop because that was really all my dad could do. They never left his side. That friendship has been, you know, an enduring and rich example to all of us. So I just want to thank John and Diane. Our father was a liberal. He was an ardent feminist way before it was cool. He would not tolerate racism from any of us or anyone else in his presence, not through thought or action or even inaction. He truly believed that the survival of a democracy requires a free and effective public education and that be provided to every citizen. And he dedicated his life, professional life, I should say, to that simple principle. I recall how he remained true to these beliefs even in the face of angry Bowie neighbors when our lily-white Yorktown Elementary was forced to integrate by federal court order busing with Landover, which was a predominantly black community, in the early 1970s. He was an employee of the Board of Education, and so he was an easy target. It was a tough time. But he never wavered. Never wavered because he truly believed in a public education, and he truly believed that that was probably the right way to solve the problems in Prince George's at that time. He also repeatedly told me that Richard Nixon was not to be trusted. And he told me this long before Watergate proved him correct. He did. And I'll never forget this type of thing my dad would do. I'll never forget we were traveling to a summer vacation up in Maine. and he turned up the AM radio in the old Oldsmobile station wagon, the kind with the fake wood on the side. And it was in the summer of 1974, and he told me, "Jay," he says, "listen, this is history being made." And I'll never forget listening to Nixon resign the presidency with my ear to that speaker in the back of that station wagon. Our father was a true citizen. He would take us out of school for one-on-one father-son field trips. He did it with all of us. He would take us to watch Congress in session, to watch the Maryland General Assembly in action. He never told us what to think. He only insisted that we think for ourselves and, most importantly, that we think beyond our own interests. Our father had a mischievous streak. He didn't watch much television, but he rarely missed his favorite show when we were kids, The Old Candid Camera, hosted by Alan Funt. Some of you may remember it. Others are just going to have to hit YouTube like I did at 4 a.m. in the morning. Dad would laugh so hard that he would begin to cry. Harmless stuff, really, like a man on the street taste tests a new food for a quick payday and a chance to be on television. Except one problem, Funt made the food absolutely inedible and impossible to chew. Dad laughed and wept. He would be crying as these would-be endorsers did their level best to choke down whatever the concoction was while pretending it was delicious for the cameras. He was also infamous in our neighborhood for telling Halloween stories. He was quite the storyteller to all the neighbor children. He would turn all the lights off in the house and make everyone come with nothing but flashlights, put a lantern in the middle of the room, and told us about a straw man. This was a fictional homicidal hermit who lived in the stables at the nearby, very nearby, Bowie racetrack. And boy, he really got into it. He got into it so much that he would go a little overboard. And I remember the only phone in the house hanging on the wall in the kitchen would be ringing off the hook with angry parents of terrified children that were refusing to turn the lights out and go to bed. But that's what made him daddy early. And perhaps his most infamous storytelling prank he did on the eve of my graduation from Dickinson College. Two of my very best friends in the world are here today, JB and Ken. And for reasons I was never totally clear about, he didn't divulge his secret. He managed to convince the two of them that the police had been looking for me. Something about unpaid parking tickets. Well, this struck true with JB because he knew, and my dad somehow divined, that JB had a stack of these $2 tickets for the Carlisle police that he had just never paid. And so this was pre-smartphone, pre-cell phone, and JB and Ken went scouring all over the campus trying to find me in hopes that they could get to me before the police took me in custody. And Dad just slow played that. It was just delicious. And he reminds them of it every chance he got. Our father was a good man. Our father is my hero. He'll be missed.